It's a muscle that we need to develop, and we're not trained or taught how to develop that muscle or how to lean into it. You know, there's all these sayings, right? Trust your gut. And when you trash somebody's gut with the wrong food, and you trash it with antibiotics, and you trash it with, you know, toxins, I mean, really, should we trust our gut? Or should we trust something that has a higher vibrational frequency, which is our heart?
Welcome to Your Health Reset, where we address the real root causes behind health issues today to get you rapid results on your health journey so you can be who you came here to be, mind, body, and spirit. I'm your host, Sinclair Keneally, survivor of complex chronic illness, expert in resolving root causes, and co-founder of Detox Rejuvenation and Meditation RX. Let's get started. Welcome back to another episode of Your Health Reset with me, your host, Sinclair Keneally, and I'm so excited for you to hear this intimate, in-depth interview that I just recorded with my amazing friend, Sachin Patel. He's the one who coined the phrase, the doctor of the future is the patient. He's a best-selling author. He's a father, a husband, a philanthropist. He runs a very large community helping health practitioners actually do their best work in the world and come from this philosophy that he teaches. So I can't wait for you to hear it because he gave us so many gems about how to return to who we really are and to reclaim our relationship with ourselves, with our intuition, to stand up in the face of tyranny, but do so from a place of love and spiritual groundedness. And I can't wait for you to learn more. Listen in. And I'm so excited to have this conversation with you. Thanks for being here, Sachin.
Absolutely, Sinclair. Thanks for having me and thanks for doing this. I think the world needs this now more than ever.
I do too. Yeah, this is really an important topic to both of us. And I've been looking forward to having a very intimate, in-depth conversation with you because I know how important this is to you and to your family. And I'd actually like to start there. Why is medical freedom so important to you? Why have you made the decision to make this a part of your public brand?
Well, first and foremost, I truly believe that nothing can fix our body better than it can fix itself. And so recognizing that, I feel, is very important. We've delegated so many other things to other people. We delegate our taxes, we delegate our oil changes, we delegate our landscaping, we delegate our plumbing. The one thing that we can never delegate is how to take really good care of our health, because it truly starts in our head, it starts in our heart, it starts, you know, with our own bare hands, and of course in our home. So it's really vital that people recognize that. And you know, I've been a proponent of being your own doctor for many, many years. That's the basis around which we built our brand. So we believe that the doctor of the future is really who we define as a patient right now. You know, seeing somebody maybe twice a year, if you're unfortunate, even once a month, some people have to see their doctor. Now, that person doesn't know you as well as you should know yourself, and they can't help you as much as you can help yourself. And having autonomy over your body is really important because that is where responsibility starts. You know, when we can have full control over our health, then we can take full responsibility of what happens to us. And as I said earlier, we delegate so many things, but our health is not something that we can delegate or should be trying to delegate to somebody else. Yes, there's a time and place for, you know, acute medical interventions, and fall off a ladder, you probably need to go see someone. Or if you break something, you probably need to see someone. Or if you need stitches, then certainly, you know, you need to go to the doctor. But most chronic health challenges are caused by poor lifestyle choices because we've delegated so many things. We delegate who's going to cook our food. We delegate the ingredients that they're going to be using, right? So it starts by us taking that full responsibility. It gives us full control. And then we have this amazing ability to unlock our inner potential, which, you know, only we can do. Nobody can do our push-ups for us, as they say.
Right, exactly. I love the way you just summarized that for everybody. I think it's so important to remember that we're in the driver's seat and that any health advice or information that we're given is really guidance. It's not a replacement for our own work.
Yeah. And intuitively, we know what's right for us. And if we don't, then that's something that we should be seeking, is how can we have heightened levels of self-awareness so that immediately we know when something is right and something is wrong. Children know this. You know, I'll give you an example. I had a friend of mine who is getting we won't mention what medical procedure it was, but her child cried for 45 minutes straight. And so his body was screaming loud and clear that this is not something I want. However, he ended up getting the procedure. And so children are very in tune with their bodies. You know, we don't give them as much credit as they probably deserve, mm-hmm. but they're very in tune and they don't have that filter. They're not worried what other people are going to think. So they fully express themselves. However, as adults, we put these, you know, we put these walls around us and act and behave a certain way so that we're socially accepted. And that makes us do things that we probably shouldn't do, even though it goes against our inner intuition. And if you're lacking that inner intuition, then that's something that we should all be focusing on developing, because it doesn't just serve us with our health, but it serves us in many different decisions when it comes to our life, in our business, in our careers, in our relationships, and in so many other places, it serves us so well.
Let's talk about intuition for a minute, because what I've witnessed in the past couple of decades and what I felt in myself on my own journey recovering from chronic illness is that I actually lost my intuition for quite some time. And it turned out that, you know, that in part was a reflection of the chronic illness that I had. You know, I had several overlapping diagnoses. And it was also in large part due to the environmental toxicants that I'd been exposed to. I literally had to decalcify my pineal gland and to flush out my liver in order to actually start being able to hear my own inner voice again versus everybody else's. Right. And I know you spent a lot of time in your work teaching people how to do that as well. What are your thoughts on reclaiming intuition? Why have we lost it and how can people get it back?
Part of it is because we don't have that confidence in ourselves that our body knows best. You know, from the moment we're born, we're being taught things and we're being told that this is the way the world is and this is, you know, the way it has to be for you. You know, one of my favorite, you know, subjects to study is Steve Jobs. And one of the things that he learned when he went to India is that people may not have intelligence, how we define it, but they have something even more powerful, which is their inner intuition, this knowing of what's right and what's wrong, because they're so tuned in. And, you know, and that could be a spiritual thing. It could also be an environmental thing, as you said, but it's a muscle that we need to develop. And we're not trained or taught how to develop that muscle or how to lean into it. You know, there's all these sayings, right? Trust your gut. And when you trash somebody's gut with the wrong food and you trash it with antibiotics and you trash it with, you know, toxins, I mean, really, should we trust our gut or should we trust something that has a higher vibrational frequency, which is our heart? So one of the things that I encourage people to do is get a heart math device, the Inner Balance. It's about $150, $160, hooks up to your iPhone or your Android phone, and you can actually speak to your heart. You can actually tune in to what your heart is saying. And, you know, some chiropractors and other practitioners do muscle testing, kinesiology. Well, I know the heart's more than a muscle, but what better muscle to test than your heart? So you can use the Inner Balance to get into a state of what's called coherence. And when you get into that state of coherence, you can then start asking yes and no questions. And you will start seeing your coherence will either go up if the answer is yes, or it'll go down if the answer is no. And so you can actually build and develop this muscle and actually use that device as a tool to tap into, you know, how you feel. And, you know, that is so important in terms of manifesting. It's so important in terms of decision-making. You know, the more in tune we are, the faster decision-making takes place. And, you know, success loves speed. So it's great for business. And it's also great for our personal lives as well, because we can quickly move on to the next decision without emotional attachment. You know, there's so much emotion in decision-making, and that's because we're not listening to our intuition. You know, when we have a GPS on in our car, and it tells us, hey, to go left, we don't get emotional about that, right? We follow the directions that we're being given. So our inner guidance, that inner compass that we have, is just like a GPS. When we listen to it, we don't attach emotion to the answer or the response that we get, yet it's important to ask really good and the right questions. So I would encourage everyone to really get a heart math device. I mean, it's a great neurofeedback tool to help you de-stress and decompress, but you can also use it as a tool to, you know, to really tap into that inner voice.
That is such a great point. And I've never heard anybody say it quite like that. If we've already trashed our gut, then our intuition at the gut level is not actually available to us. It has to be reclaimed, and to actually go straight to the heart instead. What a gem. Share this with everybody you love and care about, guys listening in. This is important. I want to talk about if we're going to reclaim our intuition and go straight to the heart and move this into our everyday lives like this again, what do you think can be reclaimed that's been lost for our cultural conversation? If enough of us actually did that, because from where I'm sitting, as we censor each other more and more, as we get more and more reactive, as we shut each other out, and as we have this top-down, authoritarian, even totalitarian response to how we should be treating our own bodies, we're really missing out on, you know, all of the actual gifts that we could be sharing together. And we're missing out on the expression of ourselves as humanity. And I know you're thinking about this a lot, so I really want to give you a chance to talk about it.
It's a loaded question, and there's lots to unpack there. But I do feel that, you know, there's a callus around all of our hearts that's been created because of our experiences, because of betrayal that we may have gone through, or, you know, just having a hard time these days trusting and knowing who to believe and who not to believe. You know, you turn on one channel, you hear one thing, you turn on another channel, you hear something else. You know, there's two sides to every story and an infinite number of interpretations. So there's a Sanskrit word called Maya, and Maya is illusion. And, you know, it's said that we live in this illusionary world where nothing is actually real. The only thing that's real is the soul and the essence of who we are, because that's never changing. So the world around us is constantly changing. You know, you look at a tree one day and you go see that same tree tomorrow, the roots might be a little bit deeper, the branches might be a little bit longer, the leaves might be a little bit bigger. So it's actually not the same tree as it was yesterday when you defined it in your mind, which means it's not real. So the only thing that is real is our Atma, or which is also known as our soul. And so that's what I try to pursue in my personal practice. Every day is I try to go a little bit more inwards instead of going more outwards. And I try to detach from our senses, because our senses are where, you know, all illusion actually starts. And when we numb the senses, well, not numb them, because, you know, drugs and things like that do that. And certain drugs like ketamine can be very beneficial because they can numb the senses and we can go inwards, right? We can quiet the noise. But when we can close our eyes, you know, get really quiet, put ourselves in a nice quiet environment and remove sensory inputs, go into a sensory deprivation chamber, for example, like a float tank or something like that, that's where you start to hear that voice loud and clear. And, you know, when there's all this outside noise coming in, our brain has to continuously process all that information. But when you shut that information off and you get into a really quiet state or a quiet environment, then we can hear what's going on. And that compass can guide us very, very loud and clear. So that's something that a lot of people don't do. You know, we're bathing, we're immersed in all this outside information that's coming in, but we need to learn how to shut that off. It can be a scary place, right? When you tell people to go into a float tank, which is completely dark, no sound, you're just in there by yourself, you know, for an hour or two. I mean, that's a scary place for people to go. So, you know, that's where there's a lot of opportunity, however.
I'm really glad you brought up that it can be a scary place, at least initially, because that's certainly been my own experience. And I think that many people resist things like meditation or any practice where you can actually go inside and reclaim that quietude because of an initial response. For me, it was instant grief, becoming aware of how much pain I had been in by being separate from myself, by being outside of myself. And as soon as I started to actually reconnect with the sacred nature of who I really was as an eternal being, the first thing I became aware of was the grief of not living that truth for however long I'd been separate from it, 5 minutes, 5 years, whatever. But it's a real phenomenon of the short-term discomfort, if you will, and it can be different for everybody.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And you know, I think another reason people are challenged by it is because the voice in their head is telling them that they're so far removed from where they should be. So there's a feeling of being lost, right? So, you know, if you're not following that inner compass and then you turn the GPS on all of a sudden, you know, like, oh my God, I'm like 5 hours, you know, I've been driving 5 hours in the wrong direction, or 5 years, or whatever the case may be, in the wrong direction. And the idea of having to get back on track seems very overwhelming and daunting. So it's not necessarily about being perfect in that instant, but it's about, you know, changing directions and making better choices with every opportunity that you get, and that you will naturally find your way back to the path that you need to be on. So I feel like, you know, it can be overwhelming for some people because the voice inside of them, they know, you know, we have this knowing of what we should be doing. Mm-hmm. And we've been ignoring that voice perhaps for a long time. And it's scary to hear it so loud and clear. And sometimes it's scary to even acknowledge that I've been ignoring this voice and I need to start listening to it a little bit more.
I completely agree. And when you think about how much time we spend when we are off our own centers, it can be very painful to disengage from the behaviors that we have used to create safety for ourselves, like how we have committed to and participated in our families and our communities and our overall culture to ensure our belonging. You know, I'm part of Team Blue, I'm part of Team Red, whatever it is. You know, I behave in XYZ way. When you actually disengage from that and listen on the inside, it can be really painful to realize you don't actually need to engage that way and there might be some loss there.
Yeah. And, you know, speaking of teams, you know, we're all on the same team, right? And, you know, when we get down to the soul level, we realize that we're actually all one. And that's a hard concept to grasp because our senses, again, going back to, you know, Maya and illusion, our senses make us think that we're separate from one another, right? And that's our ego coming into place. You know, you are completely separate from me. However, that's not the case. You know, once we become, even just hearing your voice or seeing you entangles us together, right? You become part of me because the photons that are bouncing off of you are going into my brain and turning into the image of you, right? So you've literally merged with me and become part of me. And, you know, that the same applies to all of us, right? All of us human beings and everything that we see around us, we are one with it and connected with it. Because if we didn't have those photons coming into our eyes off of those, you know, things that we're seeing, they wouldn't be one with us. So I think that's really important. And it's a hard concept for people to grasp. I think you have to do enough breath work or enough meditation or plant medicines, whatever your jam is, to kind of realize that. But when you do realize that, then you start looking at the world through a totally different lens. And, you know, what you hate about other people is really something that you need to learn about yourself, or what you love about other people is trying to teach you something about yourself as well.
Okay, that leads me to something that I've been wanting to ask you for a long time, because I think you've done a really amazing job of being true to your spiritual principles, at least how it appears from the outside, as a friend watching how you market and share and things. True to your spiritual principles and in the world, but not dragged down by it or caught up in the drama, and yet refusing to look away. And what I see from the spiritual community, especially in the last couple of years, and this is a broad generalization, but I think we need to talk about it, is a lot of spiritual bypassing. A lot of, I don't have to look at this, at what's happening right now. I don't have to participate in standing up for our freedoms or doing anything uncomfortable to actually put myself out there and live these truths, because I just have to think happy thoughts. And that's the way that I contribute. And anything else would actually be a detachment from my spirituality. I would really love to hear your thoughts on this.
Nobody's ever asked me that. It's something to definitely for me to think about. Whatever you're detaching from, I mean, that's a metaphor, right? There's a part of you that you're detaching from when you do that as well. So we have to be able to come face to face with what's going on in the world. How we interpret that individually, I think, is going to be unique to us based on our experiences and our beliefs and our value system. You know, I don't look at anything and take it for face value, because I know that most of what you're going to see on TV or see on Facebook or on the internet, there's some sort of motive there, right? And, you know, we know shock sells. So a lot of it is going to be sensationalized. And, you know, part of it is just looking at it through a neutral lens and not having an opinion. We call that equanimity. So how do we look at something and not let it rattle us? Because if something changes or affects our emotions, then it affects our physiology. It affects our internal chemistry. And so, you know, how I deal with everything that's going on in the world, I just view it as entertainment, you know, and that's exactly what it is. We're being entertained. And how we choose to respond to that is totally up to us. You know, easier said than done for some people. So I'm not trying to be insensitive to what's going on and the challenges that people are facing. But I can control my immediate reality. I can control how I respond to a situation, recognizing that it is happening, that it is going on. And individually, we can do that as well. I think a lot of the world's suffering and chaos that we're experiencing is because people can't control how they respond. And so the pendulum swings both ways, right? So they swing too far in either direction. And I try to stay very grounded and stay right in the middle and try to approach things from a place of curiosity instead of a place of opinion. And when we formulate an opinion, then that's taking a stance. But when we approach something from a place of curiosity, then we're open and receptive to whatever answers we might see or whatever answers might be available to us.
I think what you said right there is really important. The refusal to look at something uncomfortable is actually displaying your own fragility and disconnect from yourself. Because if you are actually grounded in who you really are, the best of who you are, whether you call that your inner being, your highest self, then you actually can afford to look at deeply uncomfortable current events from a place of curiosity and actually show up to participate in whatever way is right for you to help affect the outcome for yourself and other people.
Yeah, and as is the microcosm, so is the macrocosm. So what's happening in the world is to the same degree happening inside us. And so if we choose to ignore what's happening, right, it's like choosing to ignore a part of us that's suffering or struggling. And life is a balance, right? It's yin and yang. It's darkness and light. And it's important for us to recognize that there is contrast. It can't be daylight all the time. Can't be sunny all the time. I mean, the plants need rain. They need water as well, right? We need clouds. We need those things. So, we have to have that balance in ourselves. And only then will the world be balanced on the outside.
That is a really beautiful point. I've spent a lot of time in the past, years before this, and now I'm really drawing on this heavily. I was fascinated by the resistance during World War II. What actually drove somebody to decide to be a part of the resistance? And what choices did they make that may have imperiled themselves in order to protect innocent people and help get them to safety, even in the face of some very difficult authoritarian circumstances? One of the things that I found most interesting was that the only common denominator they could find in World War II resistance fighters was a background in theater as a child. They came from all spiritual backgrounds, atheists to all the way to Orthodox in various spiritual traditions. But the only common denominator was a background in theater as children. What are your thoughts on that?
I don't know what to say. That's pretty remarkable. I never heard that before. I'd love to hear your thoughts on that.
Okay, so my initial thought on it was that practicing empathy, practicing stepping into someone else's shoes in a spirit of play actually built up the muscle to be able to feel connected with people beyond themselves, people that they didn't even know, people that they hadn't even met. You know, choosing to risk your life to hide a family of Jews that come in during the night from another country for perhaps sometimes months, even years at a time in your basement and warding off the threat of death for you and for them every day. What makes someone do that? You know, and it, regardless of spiritual tradition, we all have a muscle, I think, where we actually can step in and be deeply connected into someone else's path, which makes us more courageous. This is what I hypothesized anyway. It sounds good, several decades later. So I wanted to get your thoughts on it.
No, I think that makes a lot of sense. I would have to concur with that.
I've been really surprised at the consistency in your messaging, because I think it's very difficult for people to, run their businesses and be growing things and be responsible to their communities and also stay present in a place of spiritual awareness and love and be keeping first things first. And one of the things I'd really love to do with our remaining time is give you an opportunity to share with people your process for doing that so that they can do it in their own lives. How do you keep first things first, your spiritual truths front and center in a very noisy world and in your position of advocacy?
Let me start by saying this. There's been plenty of messages that haven't been posted. There might even be more messages that haven't been posted. So I'm, and I just want to be totally transparent, right? There are certain things that you want to say that you realize, I don't know if I can say that. because you just never know how it's going to be interpreted. Not that it isn't true, but you just don't know how it's going to be interpreted. And sometimes you don't have all the context to be able to fully express yourself on social media, right? And it can create some problems. So what I've learned is that I like to ask questions, and I find that curiosity is a much better approach, asking people how they feel about a certain topic and getting people to participate in the conversation. I find that really helps. Certain things I stand firm in, you know, especially with relationship to, you know, the position that we're in as healthcare practitioners, we know what's right and what's wrong. We know when certain rules are being broken. We know when certain things, sacred, you know, relationships are being violated, you know, for our patients. And so we have an obligation to at least warn people as best as we can that, you know, hey, this isn't right. Or maybe you want to just wait, right? Give things some time. And as we're seeing that a lot of this narrative is falling apart, and I'm glad that many people waited and many people, you know, listened to their intuition and made a decision that was favorable to them without compromising their values. So, you know, for me, it's really about how do I pour into myself each and every day? How do I start my day right? I mean, it's obviously eating healthy. It's being in the right autonomic state. I think that's a big thing that, you know, is important for us to recognize, is that if we're constantly in fight or flight, then what are we going to want to do? We're going to want to run away from our problems, or we're going to want to fight, which is not what the world needs right now, right? The world needs stillness, and that stillness occurs in a parasympathetic state. So I try to stay as parasympathetic as I can, and I focus on the things that move me in that direction. So things like breathing correctly, right? Simple, low-hanging opportunity. Another thing I do is fasting, right? That helps us get more parasympathetic. Sleep helps us get more parasympathetic. So I focus on the things that calm my nervous system down, you know, try to be as present to my body's needs as I possibly can. And I try to stay out of that fight or flight state, because I don't want to fight and I don't want to run, right? And, you know, we can either fight and push through things, which nobody wins in that situation, or we can run away from them. And the problem still exists if you run away from it, right? Running away from something doesn't solve the actual problem. So I just like to focus on, you know, being as parasympathetic as I can, because that's where I can be my most creative self. That's where I can be my in my best problem-solving state to solve challenges that my family might be facing, my business might be facing, that the world might be facing, or our community or our clients might be facing. And it allows me to show up the best way that I possibly can for the way people need me now. I'm not a fighter anyways, so that's not my MO. So I try to stay true to who I am.
That's really beautiful. Okay, I do have one more question for you though. I lied. I have noticed that for many of us in the natural health movement, and even folks in a major position of leadership, in these intense times, I'm seeing a lot of what we would call like the witch wound activated, whether it's from a karmic perspective. You know, I know for sure that I had some interesting past lives where I was sharing some truths or trying to spread some wisdom that was not in line with what the church deemed appropriate, and, you know, met with an untimely end, perhaps more than once. And I see a lot of people activated by that. I know in my own lineage, we had multiple women burn at the stake for being healers. And I see people trying to show up for themselves and what they know is right and for their communities, but doing so from a crashed state, a wounded state. And, you know, they're more than willing to have this conversation. They just need some tools. And I know that you have a personal experience with this, so I'd love to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we got to take care of ourselves first, right? We can't pour from an empty cup. You know, for me, for example, I had a past life reading and my head was decapitated for speaking the truth. And here I am ready to do it all over again, because we've been given another chance, so to speak, in this lifetime to do that and follow our, you know, karmic path and our karmic destiny, our dharma, if you will. You know, for those of us that are wounded, I think that we need to find out what's going on and, you know, exploring, you know, the trauma and getting the right type of help so that we could identify, you know, what that actually is. Some of us just don't feel right and we don't know what's causing it. And so exploring that could be very important. So working with a shaman or having a past life reading done, that could be valuable for some people. And certainly it was valuable for me, because it helped me understand, you know, why am I this way? what we have to keep in mind is that our soul, I mean, this depending on what we believe, but what I believe is our soul is reincarnated and our soul never changes. So our purpose doesn't really change, although the time has changed and perhaps the circumstances have changed. If you're a truth speaker, right, then you're always going to be a truth speaker. Like, it's not like you're going to change into something else in your next, you know, reincarnation. Your soul doesn't change, right? That's the only thing that's real. So just got to show up and be as real as you can be and live in alignment with that. And what I found is that, you know, when you do that, then the ocean kind of parts ways and the right people come into your life, the right circumstances come into your life, the right opportunities present themselves, right? Conversations like this one we're having right now take place. But many of us haven't really identified who the real us is. And so that's going back to the beginning of our conversation, is finding out who we truly are, the essence of who we are, and living in that. That's going to energize us. You know, that's what the universe is conspiring for us to be. And some of the challenges that we face, the universe is just trying to nudge us in that direction. But we've been convinced, you know, by society that we've got to fight, you know, we've got to resist, and it doesn't help us discover who we are. So part of the process is to surrender to who we are, you know, and then acknowledge who we are and then live into who we are.
Wow. I'm going to be thinking about that for a long time. I completely agree with you. I spent, I think, most of the, you know, first few decades of my life feeling in a lot of pain about being in this incarnation and wanting to go back to the union of the whole, you know, whatever that means for you and your paradigm. That was clearly what I was wanting to do, was, do I have to be here right now? Can I just go home? And I had to actually get comfortable with who I really was and let everything that I was clinging to as the illusion fall away, which was a very painful process. And, you know, I certainly wasn't the only one hurt along the way with that, because I was really hanging on for dear life to these things that I thought were stabilizing me, but actually were keeping me from who I really was. And so now for me, I have to, when I think about showing up and sharing the truth, and I do that from a place of almost detachment, you know, and I think you do too, watching you and your process. Like, I have to talk about this lifetime as if it's like a cosmic camp out, you know, like it's just a very short-term thing. And then I'm going back, you know, I'm going to get regenerate a little bit and then I'm coming back in, you know, it's a short window where I get to be here, show up and share, and then I'm out. You know, it's like one shift.
Right. No, I love that. I mean, that's the way it is. And, you know, we've got to embrace this one life in this meat suit, right? And there'll be another one. And we'll be back, you know, fighting the same battles in a different time of hopefully maybe on this planet, maybe on another one. If this one still exists, we'll be back here. But, you know, there's a saying, and I can't remember who said it, but I know it's somebody famous, but, you know, we're afraid of who we are. I think it was Marianne Williams. And ultimately, we're afraid of who we truly are, of the power that we actually possess. So it's, in a world that we live in now, it's easy to play small. It's easy to be a watered down version of yourself instead of, you know, shining your light. And one thing to keep in mind, and you know, this might be a, you know, helpful for some people, is that the brighter the light, the darker the shadows. So you always have to keep that in mind, is that the brighter the light, the darker the shadows will be. And so when you shine your light real bright, it's going to cast some pretty dark shadows, and you have to be prepared for that.
That is a really good point. Yeah, I'm going to need some time to think about that. That's So we covered so much ground today. We talked about returning to who you really are and coming from the heart and reclaiming your intuition that way, if, you know, your gut has been polluted. I'm going to be quoting you for a long time on that one. We talked about our eternal nature and the essence of who we are. I would love to get your advice for folks listening in as we close, how to step into their own courage, how to use courage as a resource in sharing their voice during these times, because how we participate in our culture and our lives is everything.
Yeah, you know, I'll tell you what worked for me, because I think it might be different for everybody, but I'll tell you what seemed to do the trick for me mentally. Somebody asked me one day, aren't you afraid of what people are going to think of you? Because you're putting all this content down there. This was many years ago, long before all this stuff happened. And I said, you know what? I would be more afraid of people finding out what I didn't share, knowing what I knew. That scares me more. So since then, I've never been quiet. I sit quietly in the background. And when I have something to say, I say it. But, you know, I'm more afraid of not sharing something that could improve the quality of somebody's life, the length of their life, or reduce suffering. I'm more afraid of what people would think if they found out I knew all along and I didn't say anything. Because you just never know who you're going to impact and whose life you're going to, you know, save or improve the quality of. And, you know, there's certain people you're never going to reach, and that's okay. Those aren't your people. I'm okay with that, right? I'm not here to be friends with everyone, right? That isn't my purpose in life, is to be friends with every single person I meet. And I'll be nice and I'll be kind and I'll be honest and I'll be truthful, but I don't have to be friends with you to do all those things, right? Mm-hmm. You know, so, you know, and you don't have to like me either. I really don't care, right? I'm detached from the fruit. I'm detached from what you think of me, you know, if I show up as I am, right? It's when we're faking it till we try to make it, or we're living a life to impress other people, then we're more concerned about what other people think of us than what we truly think of ourselves.
Yeah, that's beautiful. Okay. I just one last thing, because this is, I just can't let this end. You just teed it up so beautifully. So many health practitioners follow you, and I saw some of them try to call you out once for not following their version of professionalism. And I thought that you had a really brilliant response, and I would love to give you just a moment to talk to all the health practitioners listening in, because I know there are many, about what professionalism means to you when it comes to sharing uncomfortable truths and living from your values.
I'm trying to think of the incident you're referring to. Was there a specific incident? I know there was
several. It was when a medical procedure that is known to be harmful to children was getting normalized, and you were not okay with that. And you invited people to leave if they didn't agree that it was child abuse.
Well, you know, here's the thing, right? Like, you know, this is, and we're finding out that we're right all along, that, you know, I don't need to see studies. I don't need to wait, because I've listened to a higher power that exists in all of us. Okay. So we all have access to that same source. And I think professionalism is not what we do in the moment, but what we can look back and say we did was right. So it's not always easy sharing the truth. It's not always the easy path to take, right? The easy thing to do is to do nothing. That's what most people choose to do, right? They just choose to stay quiet. And that's easy because you're playing the neutral ground. But when there's children's lives at stake, then it's our job. It's our ethical responsibility. Sometimes we have to be, you know, doctors aren't just dispensers. We have to act as a shield, you know, and shield our patients from what's going to potentially harm them. And, you know, if that offends people, then you're probably never going to be at my house having dinner with me. So, and you're probably never going to do business with me. So what do I even care at the end of the day, right? We'll never be friends and we'll never hang out together. And, you know, I'm not going to change who I am because you're not willing to step in and you know, play the role that you've, you know, spent your entire life achieving. Right. And I'm okay with people having different beliefs than me, and they're allowed to, but they can also express what they believe on their own page. You know, we don't elevate ourselves by bringing other people down necessarily. And there's a lot to be said about what's happening in the world right now. Right. And we're quick to, you know, play Russian roulette with our children's health, and they don't have a voice for themselves. So we have to be that voice and act as a, you know, defender of that truth and shield people from the things that could potentially harm them.
Thank you so much for saying that. On my way here today, I was reflecting how you advocate for children, and my personal health journey in participating in the medical system. And, you know, my parents were just following along the script, getting a ton of antibiotics for ear infections as a toddler over and over again, instead of looking at, you know, what was causing the structural issue in the first place. You know, did a full vaccine schedule, which tanked me every time. Mm-hmm. And then getting several amalgam fillings as an early teen. So where I was quickly suicidal afterwards from that mercury exposure. And, you know, my future irrevocably changed just because my parents participated in the medical system, you know, doing what they were told to do. And I don't hold them, you know, I don't have any leftover angst about that with them, but I really want people to look at what's possible for us now that we have this data widely available.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of it is you probably wish that somebody was speaking the truth and your parents were listening, right, when this was happening to you, right, or for you in many ways, because if it didn't happen for you, then you might not even be in this position right now to help so many other people that you are. So I think that all we can do is be beacons of light, right? We can be the lighthouse so people don't crash into the rocks. And some people will still crash into the rocks, right? If they're choosing to. I mean, I think it's a choice. With children, I think it's important that we realize how important it is that we make irreversible decisions like that, that we don't make them hastily, especially if they're not at, they're virtually zero risk. So it made no sense to me.
Yeah. Thank you so much for being here today, Sachin. I so appreciate you as a light in this world for practitioners, for people taking control back over their own health, and for our entire culture right now. I think you're doing an amazing job. And I'm so delighted that you're here on the Medical Freedom Tour with us.
Well, thank you, Sinclair. And here's to health, happiness, and wholeness for all.
Thanks for listening. Go to detoxrejuvenation.com to find the links in the show notes to everything we covered in this episode. Please subscribe, review, and share with other humans who need this precious information. Let's help each other. Until next time, love, Sinclair.